Session number 13266.
Mr. Branson, Reel 2.
We fell to the ground automatically when the 88mm shell hit one of the tanks and showered us with bits of metal. But it had been in the plan of the assault, there was to be no stopping for wounded or anything like that. All the able-bodied men had got to make for the objective. So we were soon on our feet again and relieved to get to the top of the beach. Although we were then facing the minefield that I mentioned earlier.
As you ran up the beach, were you aware of men dropping injured or dead around you?
Well, quite honestly, I can't say I was, because I'd got only one kind of fixation in my mind, and that was to get up to the objective as soon as possible. And we knew we'd be after reorganised at a later stage, but it wasn't the time to look over your shoulder.
Were you shouting to your men anything, giving orders?
I don't think they need a lot of encouragement. There's a, I always feel that there was a big Yorkshire contingent of men from Hull. And one of their qualities is they have a kind of stoicism and mixed with a strange kind of humour. And they all seem to know what they'd got to do and followed without hesitation.
So you felt shouting out would have been superfluous?
I don't think it was necessary.
So you got up to your first objective, which was the pillbox.
Yes.
But you didn't have to do anything.
Well, no, I think, quite honestly, had it been manned, I don't think we would have stood much of a chance to put it out of action, because we were really relying on the petard tank to approach the pillbox. Box and detonate one of its charges. Had there been small arms fire from the pillbox, it would have taken us some time to put it out of action without. And I feel that we would have lost a lot of lives.
Did you see dead Germans around there?
We didn't see any. No, they were not in the vicinity of the pillbox. What was inside, I don't know.
How did you feel by this stage?
Well, going on, I don't think I had any real feelings until we'd got to the second objective and we'd established ourselves. Captured about 40 or 50 Germans, and I fired a green very light to indicate to the to the battalion commander that we were on the objective. And quite honestly, I never thought I'd find myself in a position to do that.
Had you expected to have been killed?
It seemed a very. The odds seemed. The odds didn't seem very good to assault from the sea onto a German held position. I must admit, but nevertheless, we believed in the kind of support we were getting. I mentioned the preliminary bombing by the RAF. There's not many infantry battalions have a couple of destroyers firing over them for 10 minutes. And also, I believe the artillery were also firing from craft on the front. From the onset, we had some confidence in the heavy kind of support we were going to get, and in the end, it was that support, I suppose, that enabled us to get onto our objectives relatively unscathed, perhaps compared with B Company that ran up against the sea wall and lost men on the beach and had difficulty in surmounting the wall.
Now, I interrupted your narrative with you having taken all those prisoners and shifted the Germans from behind the sea wall. Can you take the narrative further now?
Progression from the stage.
Yes.
It was with some relief to see our own C Company troops moving in, who were the follow-up company to A Company. The plan was for them to make their way towards Versumer, and they would be taking the lead in that move, and we were following. It wasn't long before they were held up with Spandau fire, and I remember well really feeling as if we'd done our initial job and resting on the lane on the hedgerow, whilst the troops ahead were trying to sort out the Spandau fire that was holding us up. The CO, Chalky White, came up and had a few words with me and asked me what the hold-up was. All I could tell him was that there was a pocket of resistance that C Company were trying to sort out. He went on down the road to the scene of the hold-up, and I remember well another burst of Spandau fire, and within minutes he was coming back on a stretcher. So we lost him fairly early in the morning, or mid-morning.
And then?
Well, we pressed on to the line of march, really, Versumer, and then Villers-le-Sec, and then on to San Gabriel. At this stage, or later, A Company left the road to winkle out any Germans that were off the track, really to make sure that the road was clear for troops to continue advancing down, because obviously the quickest way in an advance is down the road. We fanned out, and the corn was fairly high at this time, and there were lots of Germans, some of them very young, taking refuge in the corn. I suppose perhaps some were more trigger happy than others, but it was a little bit like beating for grouse. We winkled these Germans out. Some were shot, some were taken prisoner. I took my own prisoner and was quite pleased to have a Luger pistol early on in the proceedings.
This business of taking prisoners, you were tell me about taking prisoners there, and that yet earlier you said with those other Germans who tried to wave a white flag, you didn't accept surrender. What were the criteria for deciding whether you'd accept surrender or not?
I don't really know. I know when I, on this particular occasion, when I ran into some Germans in a wooded area, they really put their hands up so quickly that one's spontaneously going to shoot, and then sometimes one just feels a restraint, but it's not always so. I know there are incidents, and you know, I don't really like to record them because one's own colleagues sometimes shoot, and you wonder, and others might wonder, was it necessary to take them out when there were no real threat?
But what about that group who did wave the white flag? Why was surrender not accepted then?
Well, I think it was so early in the proceedings, there was the feeling that they'd been manning a gun and wreaking damage, and then just to walk away from it didn't seem right to us.
You mean they should have surrendered earlier?
Well, no, we didn't feel any justice in accepting a surrender. They were some distance away from us when we were firing at them.
So what happened next to you that you remember?
We then got back onto the road, and we were approaching a small hamlet called San Gabriel. It would be late in the afternoon by this time, and this was there were a group of houses and what would be the main road through the street. We knew the Germans were there because there had been some exchange of fire as we were approaching. And when we got into the main street, that sounds rather big. In actual fact, it's just a few houses each side of the road, and the road seems relatively wide. There's a rather macabre scene in some respects that as we were going down the street, of all things, a gendarme appeared on a bicycle, pedalling furiously towards us and waving his hands, obviously trying to indicate to us that the Germans were still in the village. I remember him clattering to the ground with another burst of fire, but nevertheless, it was a worthy effort of his to give us some indication. We worked our way to the end of the street, where it really ran out, and it was a sharp right turn, so it was simply a matter of leaping out and firing as quickly as possible round the corner, in case, we imagined it would be pinpointed. This we did, but the Germans had pulled further back, and in fact they left the village and installed themselves on the front edge of a wood, just beyond the village. We were under the cover of a sunken road as we approached this wood, but between the wood and the road then there was an open meadow, and the only way forward was really at some time to cross the meadow in the open with giving yourself some supporting fire. And it was here that when we were halfway across the meadow that Spandau fire took a few out, and Freddie Lowe was wounded, that I mentioned earlier. We came back and attempted then to get round the edge of the meadow to approach this German position from the right-hand side. And we were all right whilst we were moving along a sunken road on the right-hand side of this meadow, but eventually we came to a gate which we'd got to pass in front of, and it was obvious that in any kind of holding position that the gate would be pinpointed by one of the German guns. But nevertheless, we'd got to get round them, and we used the normal technique of a clip of chaps running over the gate quickly, and then another group. And as the, I don't know, it was the second or third group went over, in fact, we did encounter the Spandau fire, and I've mentioned the stoicism and the humour of the men, these Yorkshire men. One of the a lance corporal, actually he wasn't in my platoon, but we were a bit mixed up. He was in 8th platoon. As he went over the gate, he was caught in the gunfire. And he came bouncing back, clutching his backside, cursing that the buggers had shot him in the backside, or a little stronger than that. And immediately there seemed to be a temporary halt whilst we pulled his trousers down. He was pouring in blood, but he'd got his friend. Oh, we were trying to put a field dressing. Where we were going to put it, I don't know. Somewhere. His friend had a good look at his wound and then announced with some triumph that it's all right, they've missed him. As if that put everything right. But this man, this lance corporal, was a very good soldier. What happened to him, I don't know. It could have been a very nasty wound. We had to pull back and regroup again, and by this time I saw a solitary tank had appeared in the road near the meadow. Actually, I think it was one of the floating tanks, we used to call them Donald Ducks, because it had got a lot of it's got its skirt on still. And I had a word in the kind of lee of this sunken road. I had a word with the tank commander. I think they're in the, funnily enough, in the Nottinghamshire Yeomanry. I think they're kind of an independent. They're in some kind of independent brigade. And I told him what our predicament was. And that there was a Spandau holding us up on the in the woods. And asked me if he could give us some assistance. Well, we decided that he'd go across the meadow and we'd follow in the cover of the tank. I suppose we ought to have known, really, that in theory, generally, Spandaus are very often accompanied by 88mm guns and vice versa. And unfortunately, when the tank was again halfway across the meadow, it took a direct hit from a German 88, and the tank rumbled on. I think the driver must have slumped onto the accelerator, but two of the chaps dived out of the turret on fire and seemed pretty badly burned. So it was another abortive effort to get across this meadow. In due course, in the early evening, more troops had arrived on the scene, and it was I think the battalion was able to make a bigger scale plan, and we kind of regrouped with in greater strength, and approached these woods, firing everything we'd got, which saw the Germans out.
Was this in the dark?
No, it was because there were light nights. It was, I remember the double summer time in, really, in those days. It'd be shortly before dusk. That was really the end of D-Day for us. We got as far as a place called Bracy, and that's where we spent the night. I remember we had to make one or two patrols to see that we had got some kind of cover. And on this particular night, it fell to Bill Sykes to patrol the perimeter, whilst the rest of the men in the company got some rest.
Did you manage to sleep?
I think, looking back, I can never remember. I can only remember one occasion when I really slept in Normandy, and which I shall come to later. It was one day that we came out of the line. But obviously, you have to make up some kind of sleep. But if you could snatch a 2 or 3 hours, it was good. But it's terrible. Always a strange sensation when you wake up and you realise where you are. There's a difficulty in falling asleep in those circumstances.
Did the fighting stop at night?
Well, we weren't bothered that night. And the next day, we made our way. We are really at this stage. Coming in from the coast would be on the left-hand side of Bayeux, which is actually north of Bayeux. So we'd bypassed Bayeux, and we crossed a main railway line that I think ran to Bayeux, and we made our way to some higher ground at a place called Saint-Léger, a mixture of French and English. We found ourselves some very well dug German trenches. They must have been perhaps a gun position or something there at some time. It gave us admirable cover. They're very deep trenches. There were good firing points in them. They dug into the earth, so you kind of almost got a sleeping plateau as well. I know when we spent our night, it was kind of a circular set of trenches. When we spent the night there, we'd put two men forward as on watch, we'd rope ourselves together, and so that the men could try and get some sleep, and if anything happened, one of the watch pulled the rope, and obviously waken the rest of the platoon up. It was not, apart from, it was very evident at this stage when we were at St Leger that all the kind of backup fire that we'd heard on the first day was intermittent. It was the odd gun firing. Well, obviously, this was whilst all the follow-up troops were landing, and they probably had their own problems with weather and the Mulberry Harbour and all this kind of business. But it was relatively quiet. I remember one of our RAF planes coming down, and the pilot coming down and going out to fetch the pilot in. It was a bit of relief, certainly for him, to find himself amongst British troops, and it was a small occasion when the camaraderie between Army and Air Force was seen. But I think we're fortunate enough to have two or three nights there. Obviously, there was some reorganisation having to be go on in the rear. I remember on the Sunday morning, it seemed an odd mixture you get in a battle zone. The Padre sent a message to say that he was going to have a small service in some farmyard nearby, and that if any men who could be spared wanted to go back, he'd like to see them. I think one or two did, but in the afternoon there was a big move forward with the battalion had been given the task of making the way towards Tillyself's Hill, and we were to take over some high ground which was known as Point 103, overlooking Saint-Pierre. Our order of march was through a small hamlet called La Pavie on the way. I remember this was a big advance forward involving tanks and a big move forward with all the infantry. Our particular company, Bill Sykes with his 8th platoon was leading, and I was coming up with 7th platoon behind him. 9th platoon was following. Spiker had instructed that when we went through this